You're listening to Blue Collar CEO, the podcast that's all about helping you build a better, more profitable, and more sustainable home service business. Each week, we'll cover a different topic that will help enable your company to move forward to success. And here's your host, Ryan Redding.
What is up, Blue Collar CEOs? It's Ryan, and it is awesome to be with you today. Hey, I'm getting ready to introduce you to Brett Neal. Brett and his wife own High Velocity Accounting. They're an accounting firm that specializes in the home service space, specifically HVAC companies, but they work a lot with Service Titan, Housecall Pro. They understand the numbers in your business and make sure that you understand how to make better decisions with your money. They're going to be talking about the 4M framework that they use. There's a lot of things we're going to be getting into. So I'm just going to shut up. Let's introduce you to Brett. Dude, Brett, I'm really glad that we're able to find time to connect from you from sunny California. For those who don't yet know who you are, I know you've been in the space for a minute, but for those who maybe don't know you yet, let's start there. Who are you and what do you do?
Yeah, good morning, Ryan. I appreciate that. My name is Brett Neal. I own High Velocity Accounting along with my wife. We're both CPAs that we're really fortunate to get into the home services realm, specifically HVAC, of course, but we're starting to expand our service offering. I like to joke around. CPA firms are like gas stations. There's one on every corner. So how do you stand out? You niche. And I think we've heard that from, you know, the top people, Tommy Mello and such. Focus on one thing. Yeah. And we're really starting to, I want to say change people's lives. I mean, I don't want wipe the ego off there, right? I don't mean it like that, but I do mean like hopefully connect with home businesses, home service businesses and help owners kind of change their view and give them some good numbers.
I mean, honestly, you say it sounds like it sounds grandiose, but really when so many companies don't have a good bookkeeper, don't have a good CPA, don't have anyone that they can trust and rely on for solid financial insights. Yeah. Having someone whose quality step into that role can be a massive game changer, not just for the business, but for the personal life. So I think you're selling yourself short of the impact that having somebody trusted and qualified dealing with the financials and making them make sense in a way that's helpful for home service companies. And I get asked too, since you're married to a CPA, like two CPAs being married to each other, I'm sure that's super exciting.
How dare you?
I mean, look, I'm sure your pillow talk is amazing.
I'm the boring one. My wife's great. Like, yeah, I understand. Keeping the conversation going sometimes, not between us. Like, we love talking about sharing our clients and kind of sharing stories and putting kind of a major list together on like, hey, you know, we're hearing this problem across the board. How can we kind of change what we're doing and serve them better? And we've really grown.
Yeah. How did you get into the space of, cause like, for instance, like I've got my MBA, my sister's a CPA. So like, I understand a lot of people who are like traditional schooling might not think, hey, home services as like a niche sort of market. How did you find yourself wanting to and enjoying working with people in HVAC?
I mean, we worked for some large firms. Actually, we met my wife at a large firm here in Fresno area. We had babies, had kids, kind of took a little time off away from work. I'm an aircraft mechanic out of high school. I have my, what they call an A&P aircraft.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah.
That's my blue collar side. I'm a hands-on individual. And what I saw early on was CPA firms, you know, do year-end accounting and they kind of give like a list of journal entries or a summary of the financial statements and then give that back to the client and say, hey, here, post this to your books. And I really felt that I could be a great liaison between what CPAs were trying to do for businesses and put that together. We happened to connect with a great individual. It was through Housecall Pro originally, but a great individual in the Dallas-Fort Worth area as an HVAC company, and he was growing. Mm-hmm. And got a peek at his books, and I was like, oh my gosh, you know, I think there's something we could do here to help you out a little bit. And it's just been a great journey for the last 5 years, really. Watching him grow and watching his company grow and just been able to be a part of some great things. So that's really what's pulled me in.
Yeah. That's so cool. And I know I had a similar experience, like watching the impact you can bring from the outside to help somebody in the trades grow their business. Cause these guys, the men and women in the space are good humans, hardworking humans. And sometimes they just don't know, like they don't know financials, right? So when you start talking about like, hey, here's some KPIs I want to track, or here's how I want to think about like organizing your books in a way that makes you more efficient or more profitable, those things can be really huge. Do you have like maybe a couple top two or top three sort of like issues that you tend to see with I guess specifically HVAC companies about when you look at their books for the first time, any sort of like initial sort of things that you go, this is low hanging fruit, man. Like you're probably making this mistake. Stop making this mistake.
So there's going to be the connection between House Call Pro or Service Titan or your CRM. One of the things I always hear is we don't have accounts receivable. But I can go into the books pretty quickly and say, well, you know, first of all, if you're accepting credit cards, like you do have AR in a sense, right? Maybe it takes a day two for that to process. But on top of that, usually what we see is invoices coming through with that are not being matched. And I hate to be dull here, but are not being matched to like bank deposits. So it's pretty easy for me to go in the QuickBooks file or something like that, look at basically bank deposits, and there'll be a year's worth of outstanding bank deposits, but they'll tell me the bank's reconciled. And that's a huge, like, oh no, there's some issues here. So I know the balance sheet and the profit and loss aren't agreeing with each other. And people like to say the bodies are on the balance sheet. So you kind of dig a little bit and there's negative balances, and it's kind of pretty easy to spot if it isn't being maintained. And it is, it's a tedious, I like to say, don't get out of the truck just to become an accountant, you know, like, right. We're starting to grow our companies. And it's like, okay, everyone says, know your numbers. How do I focus on that? What do I do? Like, oh man, don't go and reinvent that wheel. Don't recreate a process. We've really put that together for you to help the companies become more efficient, from collecting data to kind of massaging the data, turning it into information, and then working around reporting it.
So tell me a bit about that process, because everything you're saying, I think people superficially would like tip their head and be like, yeah, I do that. Or maybe they do, but they might not realize the gap between where they are and what somebody who's a qualified experience, like finance professional, kind of like what they're able to deliver. Do you mind talking about some of like your 4M framework and what that does and how it works maybe?
Yeah, I love. So the 4M framework was really like a talking point to kind of just keep the conversation going. But I found it to be very helpful and to kind of give some clarity as to what it is that we do. The first M is maintenance. And that's where I talk about the tediousness of being a bookkeeper, being an accountant, collecting data. And there's data coming from all kinds of transactions. Maybe you have the WEX cards. Maybe your staff has, you know, a bank card or a credit card and they're out there filling up their trucks. So we try to collect that data. You're out having meals and entertainment, just every transaction. We really want to get connected with your vendors, suppliers, so that no invoice is getting missed. We're trying to capture it. I like to say, like, don't let QuickBooks do your accounting. It's really just there to help you. And, you know, Intuit and QuickBooks is making, and I'm sure the other companies as well, have made some huge strides into, hey, it's automated. Look, we've matched this transaction for you. But is it right? Is it on time? And are you controlling it, or is it controlling you? Never let the software control you. I mean, and I feel that's true with Service Titan, House Call Pro, CRM. Like, once you kind of dig in and feel what it does for you, it's nice to expand and then own it. You know, write the check. You write the check when you're paying your vendors or suppliers or however you pay your suppliers, and then let QuickBooks come in and match that transaction. Don't let QuickBooks, hey, I found this transaction from, you know, Johnstone Supply. It must be for materials. Like, well, what kind of materials? Is it related to install? Is it commercial? Is it residential? Is it a service job? Are we buying inventory? Right. There's a lot of questions.
So interesting. Around each transaction. Yeah. It's so interesting because I feel like a lot of people, especially when they integrate like QBO or QuickBooks into like a House Call or Service Titan, that sometimes they rely on the like API connection to do all that work. And to your point, it rarely works smoothly. And so people are like stuck with like these headaches of like, well, how is this correctly categorized? And how do you exactly like cost yourself for a residential install versus a commercial install? So that's interesting. So maintenance was like your first M. What's the second M in your framework?
Yeah. And just on your question real quick about what do I see? Like, what are the questions that are asked? And I'll get definitely jump in a second.
Yeah, you're good.
I just made just made me think about it. Is placement, once you said category, that tends to be a bigger question. Like what should my, and I know there's so many models out there, but what should my chart of accounts look like? What people should go above the line, meaning cost of goods sold, you know, direct labor, what people should, you know, and then you fall into the second M, which is metrics. So once we've categorized everybody in their right spot and the transactions in the right spot, what percentage of income is typically what we hear should that be, right? So what should my vehicle expense as a percentage of income be? What should my profit, gross profit margin be? And then that's where we start. That is the second M, which is metrics. And I really talk about, once we've done the tedious work, put together all the financial data, put together a financial statement, review that on a monthly basis. And of course, you want to have your accounting up to date, really daily, at least weekly, depending on the size of your company, and review that often. But metrics, KPIs, and financial statements is a second M. And then sitting down and really looking at that. And you don't want to look at it just week to week or month to month. You want to look month over month, last year over previous year. And of course, a lot of companies are having excellent growth. You know, different. If you're an early company, a young company, you might be experiencing some great growth. It's hard to compare last January to this January in the sense that, especially if you have 2X or 3X or 5X, like, man, these numbers aren't even similar. We've added 10 people since last year or something like that. But at the end of the day, you want a trend. You do want to see. Yeah. And as you get to know your financials and we meet with you, it's like, oh, okay, I know what took place. You know, I have an idea of how many calls that we did. I'm starting to learn my average ticket, and I see how it falls into the financial statements. And that, Ryan, leads us into the third M, which is management.
So I want to, before going to management, because I think you started tiptoeing into something that I think is really common, which is, and not to vilify a lot of like FSMs, like House Call or Service Titan or whatever they're using, but they rely so much on like a dashboard perspective of like just what the data shows at this state in time that it fails to reflect the trends. So month over month, year over year, these sort of things that would help tell a story. How important do you feel like, because you started saying this, but like, how much of a problem is it if somebody only relies at a snapshot point in time versus understanding the story that those numbers are actually trying to say?
Sure. So I'm going to get a little nerdy here for a minute. Balance sheet is that snapshot in time. It's where you're at right now as of that day, how much money is in the bank, what your accounts receivable. The profit and loss is a summary, a collection of data over a certain amount of time. Could be a week, depending on however you want to filter that. Typically a month to month. Without a trend and knowing what's behind those numbers, I hear a lot of people kind of say, oh, I look at 100 P&Ls, you know, a year. I look at different companies. My first question is, what about the data? Like, yeah. Do you know, great presentation, but it hasn't been, and it doesn't need to be audited or reviewed. Those are kind of GAAP, G-A-A-P terms. But what I do mean is just some confidence in the data. And then if you have that trend, so if you handed me a profit and loss statement for a month, I might say, well, could we look at this for the last 3 months, the last quarter? Could I look month over month so that I can identify, make sure that the transactions have gone into the same buckets? I always laugh, apples to oranges, but there's like so many different apples out there. Yeah. So if we're comparing apples to apples, is it red apples, green apples? Like, you can really dig deep. And that's where I think that we stand out as a firm, is the details. So it's not just a high level, oh yeah, it looks good, you're in the right profit margin. We want to get in there and audit some specific jobs. You know, was the job closed out properly? Were all of the materials properly added to that job? Did the technician discount for any reason? And if he did discount, why? So, right, the big picture, sure, like, okay, everything seems to be falling into place. We've got good profit margins. But why? And that's really where I think that the trends can kind of help break that down.
Yeah, I agree with that. So, and you also mentioned like comparing apples and oranges and apples to make sure it's even the right type of apple. So something I hear a lot, and it's often, I feel like, from smaller companies, I'm curious for you, is there a revenue threshold for a business that may be being more granular and more articulate in what your data you're tracking and comparing against makes sense? For instance, if somebody's a $250,000 a year company, do they get as much value and benefit in tracking the difference between Granny Smith apples and Fuji apples versus a company that's a $25 million a year company? Like, is there quantifiable benefit to one over the other?
Ryan, that's a great question, because I've had to kind of get my butt kicked on that a little bit, which is learning that the details do matter. Mm. And for sure, and I've heard this in different seminars. I've asked some specific questions to CPAs before me that are in the home services businesses, like being accrual over cash. Start today, right? Like, excuse me. Why not know that data and get in the habit of trying to count?
You're arguing for accrual accounting, gap accounting, like traditional CPA sort of accounting versus cash based. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, digging too deep to a full accrual and adjusting journal entries and depreciation and that kind of stuff. Sure. But definitely knowing what jobs, the average ticket, what it took to get that job, trying to understand your cost per acquisition, cost per lead, knowing the statistics behind the data. I think that at day one, as much as you can, and if, you know, hey, 3 years, 5 years gone by, you have a 15-year business, that's not a big deal. It actually gives us more data to kind of start to pull into, like, hey, you know, it's out there. You've collected it in one way or another. We could kind of start to form a little bit of a picture around, you know, highest paying jobs, you know, the 80-20 rule, right? 20, right. Whatever, you know what I mean, right? So kind of dig in around that. And
so you mentioned, and I want to get on to the fourth M, because, or actually we'd stop at the third M, but you mentioned a couple KPIs. You think, hey, as long as you know these KPIs, do you mind rattling those off again? Like, what do you feel like are the most important KPIs that either you look for or you try to teach your clients to pay attention to make sure that they're governing their business well?
Well, if I start from the bottom, net profit, just pure net, right? It's a net. It's what you've caught. Story around everything. You know, you hear a lot about EBITDA. And I always say, well, what about EAT, earnings after tax, EAT, right? So it kind of depends on where you're heading with your company.
Yeah, it also totally depends on your goal. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. You know, and also a roofing company is not the same as an HVAC company. There are going to be different metrics. So I hate to just put blanket metrics around everything, but from the outside looking in, you know, we talk about a 25% net profit. If we went to looked at McDonald's financial statements, you know, they would probably have like some similar metrics around that. The truth is,
25% profit.
You know, if you're a growing company, you're probably not at 25% net profit, and you know, and that's okay. You know, it just depends on where you're at. But, you know, so you want to watch direct labor, make sure that the right people are doing direct labor. I know smaller companies, you're going to have people bounce around like, hey, do you have an install crew? Well, we do, but, you know, one of our individuals will kind of hop off and go over and do services.
They might wear multiple hats. Yep.
Yeah. And depending on how you're collecting that data or the job, like if it's something like QuickBooks online payroll, probably a little bit more difficult to collect that data. Like, did he clock in and clock out and switch to a different job ticket? Or is he just generally classified as install? So that's where it could get a little bit granular and really like, well, gosh, we were 25% direct labor this month. That's high. What were the reasons? And that's where, again, I get back into just to the trend. And, you know, and when we talk about building, it's like, well, can we get a general chart of accounts? And I go, sure, absolutely. But what does your company specialize in? Like, what is this Brian's company, and how does he want to treat his employees, and what does he want to do on the general and administrative side to grow his company? So I do try to create financial statements around the story around your company to look for that consistency. But secondly, is really like, but where are you guys heading? And don't compare yourself to the $300 million company in the Northwest.
Thank you for saying that. Good Lord, thank you for saying that.
Yeah, like, I don't want to put you in a big bucket, right? I want to be able to. And that's one great thing about us doing this is we do have that kind of local, how would you say, break that down, kind of the local information about, hey, you're a $3 to $5 million company in California, where you stand against other $3 to $5 million companies.
Do you have access to like industry benchmarks? Like, hey, we work companies of similar sizes in similar regions. Like, do you have access to like compare even as a percentage books like that?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I can almost, you know, tell you your break even, how many people you have on board, you know, based on kind of where you're at, gross revenue. Yeah. And then if we start to get to talking and you're like, oh, I don't quite have that, then that's something to dig into.
Yeah.
I would blanket in one, 3 to 5 million, probably have about 80 to 100,000 in general and administrative monthly. Typically is kind of what I see.
Yeah. I remember, it was several years ago, I had access to a tool called, I think it's called Industrious CFO now, but I think at the time it was called Fintel. And the whole thing was like, it would aggregate different industries' financial data. And you'd like sort it by NAICS code, do the whole things. But it's so fascinating to be like, hey, so companies that are in excess of 100 million a year, how do their margins change compared to a company that's like sub 5 mil a year?
Right.
So interesting. But some people, I think, just go, well, if you're a $3 million shop, you just scale that number up to 300 million and bada bing, right? Like they don't realize that the actual makeup of the business changes and therefore those ratios change as they grow. But I digress. No one cares about my background. They care about you. So you back to the four M's, maintenance, metrics. And then I think I interrupted you right after you said the word management. Tell me about management.
Yeah, management. And that was a great lead in, Ryan. Like that's kind of what we're heading towards is really understanding them.
Clearly, I did that on purpose.
You're good at this. is taking that information and, managing it. So having that monthly, weekly meeting around what did we do? What did we do right? What did we do wrong? Are we in the right margins? If so, why not? And then break that down and really compare it to a budget and not just the financial budget of, hey, we did $2 million last year. We want to do $2.5, $3 million this year. Break it down to, again, what was our average ticket? What did it take to make the phone ring? And compare each really on a month to month. How many jobs did we do? What was our average ticket? What created our gross revenue? And what I like to do is kind of take that extra step. Well, if we hit budget, budgets are great if you hit them because the numbers are comparable. If you don't hit them, are we still in the same? We're still in the same percentages,
right?
So kind of a what if? Okay, well, great. Like here's what you did at for a $400,000 month, and we expected you to have a $400,000 month, but you went and did $600,000. So how did your numbers align then? If we were to do a budget at a $600,000, because budgets are great, but they're really just something to guide. It's a trail map.
Yeah, sure.
Keep us on the trail. Keep us on task.
Yeah, I'm curious because you made the comment about like a company wanting to grow from 2 mil to like 2.5 mil. Do you like sometimes I like in my position, I feel like I hear people talk about they want to grow the top line, right? But sometimes they don't always correlate the cost incurred to driving that revenue. Is that something you feel like a lot of people would struggle with of like, hey, you can't just go from 2 to 2.5 or 2 to 4 like magically, right? You're going to have more expense incurred, either marketing expense, more tech expense, more vehicle and equipment expense, like all those relative expenses that drive that revenue would also change. Do you have any people struggle with like those cost drivers that would actually drive the revenue?
Well, so adding employees is probably a number one. Like I know I'm just kind of saying this blanketedly, that employees are going to drive revenue. We need more people, perhaps we need more bodies out there making sales, doing transactions. The more transactions that we do, the more revenue we're going to earn. So if we front load and add employees, especially in the slow season, like right now, January, February, March, and then all of a sudden we've got a lot more payroll than we anticipated for cash flow, right? We're not matching. Right. And I know in budgeting, especially for HVAC, where you have that seasonality, we know we're going to have lost months, which is crazy to me. Nobody wants to know we're going to have a lost month. Let's try to not do that. But at the same time, did we exceed how much cash that we really have on hand or that we were going to collect or that we needed to do the job? And that's where you're going to see people. That's where I see people kind of get in trouble a little bit. And,
that's a good point.
I mean, that's not just HVAC. That's any company that's trying to grow, balance. Yeah. So definitely, outside of going out and I think I've heard, Tom Howard say it kind of like you're going to grow into, like if you go get a building, you're going to grow into it. You're going to fill it. But that's great. But as you're growing, I mean, you can't go get that 20, 30,000 square foot warehouse and expect to just fill that in the next 3 months. So really, trying to manage growth. And, I love healthy growth, but I also love the the individuals are like, no, like we want to grow this. We're going to make this happen. And I do see it. I mean, I've seen companies go from 4 to 8 million like last year, you know, like really push it. And then I also saw some early struggling with cash flow. So cash flow needs to be managed. And if you will, Ryan, that's the fourth M, which is money.
Money feels like a big M.
We're on a team today. Like we're helping each other out right here. We're feeding this.
It's almost like we're sharing notes. We're not sharing notes. But that was just a convenient segue. Well played, sir.
money is what we try to help individuals with, which is that cash flow. So now we've done the maintenance. We're looking at the financials. We've talked about why and how it happened, and we got a budget to kind of control that. But then let's set expectations. And we have money in the bank. We know that there's probably going to be a little bit of accounts receivable, or not everyone will pay. We don't know how much the phone will ring. So we have to anticipate cash flow. And for smaller companies that might be like an S corporation, but they're really using that money to feed themselves, like I talked about, earnings after tax. Let's anticipate if we add 2, 3, 4 trucks this year, and if we do it, whether we buy them or lease them, and we add a tech to fill those trucks, what's that going to cost us in cash flow? So then we can have a big picture of, okay, great. We know that if we do this many calls, we'll cover our overhead, and then we still have a tax. And that's where for the individual, the business owner, it's like, well, where did the money go? Right.
Yeah.
And then even at that, even after the money went to pay off loans and you still have some accounts receivable, that's where you haven't even received the money yet. Well, guess what? The government, depending on how you report your taxes, still wants their tax. And so what we try to do is give that big picture. And it's great. My grandfather was a mortician. So I talk about cradle to grave. That's really where we want to help small businesses, is if we get that big picture, because a lot of small business owners and growing businesses might own, say, the building that they're in. And so maybe they have like an LLC, they're renting the business back, you know, to the building. Well, they got a couple different things going on in their tax return. I mean, maybe some guy's killing it in Bitcoin, and it's like, well, you're gonna have a, don't want to get into that, you know, yeah, but, right? But you're gonna have a different, you're gonna have a tax. And so as a big picture, like, well, great, your company did well, but you've got yourself into a little bit of trouble here because we don't have as much depreciation as we did last year. We don't have as many write-offs. You know, maybe your spouse earned a little extra money on their W-2. There's just so many variants, right? There's tax law change that affected what could happen. And so we tried to do quarterly and annual tax projections as well to really capture cash flow. So not just within the business. I will
say that is uncommon for a CPA to do. Like I don't think most people are aware. I think most people think of like a CPA as like, it's just a CPA. It's just a general blanket catch-all term, right? I don't think that they realize that there's CPAs who specialize in books. There's CPAs who specialize in auditing. There's CPAs who specialize in tax. So you have like different types of focuses. It is not common to have a CPA like you who's able to step in and not just help them with like, okay, we're gonna actually control your books and manage your books, make sure your KPIs are in line, which that's already blending like a managerial sort of approach. But now there's like a tax perspective that's in place. I would say 80% of the CPAs that I know who function in the bookkeeper role kind of don't think as proactively about taxes as you appear to.
Yeah, you tend to get either, right? You're either going to get the big picture. Like I said, give us the books at the end of the year. We'll clean them up for you. We're going to give you a tax return. Maybe give you a little bit of tax projection.
Those guys are historians. Those are always historians. That's my point, you know? Yeah.
That's funny. Yeah, exactly. But you want to be looking forward. You're trying to do stuff to grow your company, and you want to know how it's going to affect you. And we have some kind of cool programs to help us. Typically what I see is like volume, right? Like, well, okay, well, to hit your metrics, it's great. Your financial statements are kind of hitting in their margins, but at the end of the day, you have capacity and volume is an issue. And I know I'm hearing it across the board, like, oh, we don't get the calls and that kind of stuff. Sometimes we're telling people what they already know, but it's nice that it's kind of codified and that it's somewhat presented to you in a way. We can also break down, you know, your break-even costs. I think it's Billy Stephen. Is that the Sarah?
Oh, yeah. Sarah. Yeah. He's been on a show before too.
Yeah, he seems like a pretty sharp individual. I enjoy reading some of the stuff that he posts. But you know, knowing your income by the minute or by the hour, or at least by the day. And so again, it's great to have financial statements at even at the end of the month, closed by the 10th. But still, there was a lot left on the table there on knowing, hey, day to day, what happened. And that can beat you up sometimes. Like, you know, you got to get 4, 5, 10, 15, 20 calls in a day, and you got half of that. And it's Monday. Yeah. It's Monday, January 1st. Right? Already beating yourself up. So you do need that time, but also try to focus but not beat yourself up on the day to day.
Yeah, that's really well said. If somebody's listening, because I think all those four M's, there's something for everyone to kind of learn from, pick from. If somebody is curious to learn either more about what you do or about how you might be able to help them, because it sounds like you have a wealth of insight for the trades, what's the best way for somebody to reach out to you to learn more, to talk and see if you might be able to help them?
Yeah, I probably spend too much time on Facebook, but you can definitely find me on Facebook. We also have our company listed there, High Velocity Accounting. My email address is brett@highvelocityaccounting, H-I-G-H, velocityaccounting.com. Those are probably one of the two best ways to just kind of reach out. And if you have questions, if you'd like us to give you a little guidance, if you just want to look over your books. We get that a lot. Like, hey, could you dive in and just look at our books and see if things are right or wrong? I'm a little tentative, again, because I talked about like the data, what's the process behind it? How do I know, you know, that the books have been reconciled? But again, right. Like we talked about that high level stuff too. I can kind of jump in and say, hey, but I hate doing that. Hey, this isn't right. You know, and, oh, well, my spouse has been doing that. Thanks. I've definitely put my foot in my mouth a few times in the early days. So I try to be better about that and not beat up on what I see. But I'm pretty direct.
I want to give you a little bit of grace there. So the famous Dan Antonelli of Kick Charge, he's been on the show. He's a friend. He's really, really good. And if you're listening, Dan, like, kudos. Because people will show like their logos and their wraps that they found, right? Like, hey, I got this new wrap. What do you think? Yeah. And he has no problem voicing his opinion. It's very respectful. It's very articulate. But it clearly designates like, there's a difference between a dude on Fiverr or your niece who does graphic design in college and someone who specializes in building brands, right? I think it's totally permissible for you to say, cool that your ex-wife or whatever ran the books, whatever, like the dynamic is, but there's absolutely a difference between having a certified and licensed CPA come in and do their role versus somebody who audited an accounting course at a community college or watch YouTube videos or just did the tutorials at QuickBooks. Like you absolutely have a layer of expertise that you bring. And I think you should not feel shy to say those things for whatever it's worth.
It's the introverted CPA in me, right? It's hard to break out of that shell sometimes, but I appreciate that.
Extroverted CPA? Do they actually exist?
They are out there, you know, maybe some days I get better at building out,
extroverted CPA.
They're probably just got the license. They're just, but yeah, I hear you. That's funny.
Yeah. It was awesome meeting you. Thanks so much for taking the time to come on the show. I'll make sure that all your information is listed here. So Brett Neal, High Velocity Accounting, dude, keep up the great work, and I'll make sure all your contact information's there. Yeah, dude. Thanks for stopping by. Good to meet you.
Yes, sir. Ryan, thank you so much. I've enjoyed listening to your podcast and I appreciate the opportunity to be on here with you.
This episode was hosted by Ryan Redding, author of the book on digital marketing for plumbing and HVAC contractors, and founder of Levergy, the digital marketing solution for serious home service companies. You can subscribe to Blue Collar CEO on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Visit us online at bluecollar.ceo and find us on Instagram. And don't forget to subscribe and leave a review. Thanks for tuning in. We'll be back next week with another awesome episode. See you soon.